This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. While you might think it's all fun and games, the process of actually creating a computer game can actually be a tough job. It takes a team of skilled professionals, from programmers to artists, making it even more difficult is the number of platforms for games, from console play to online to mobile. Here to talk about the process of game development and its rising popularity in Cincinnati, our founder of Wraith Games, Jay Kidd, game developer and 3D artist Ben DeAngelis, and front-end and graphic designer from Jolly Crouton Media, Clayton Belcher. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Clayton, Jay, and Ben, thanks so much for being here this afternoon.
So it's
Rob DeAngelis, is that correct?
No, wires must have got across. My name is Rob Bukite. I'm with Game Studios.
Okay. My apologies. Okay, I've got it now. Rob Bukite. Okay, Rob. So thank you, Rob, and thanks for putting up with my mistake there. So we'll pick on you first.
Since you
pointed out that I was wrong here. How complicated a process this is? I mean, what goes into creating a computer game?
What's the most complicated thing you can think of? I relate it similar to film creation. Like, there are so many moving parts involved with game design. Unless you're making like the smallest little game you can play on your phone with one finger, there's normally a whole team of programmers, artists, designers, writers, a whole bunch of other people who all need to work together cohesively to make things work and not create problems.
Not create havoc in the process of doing
bugs
it.
Bugs are a constant problem. You always got to watch out for that stuff. But it's very, very complex and takes hundreds of man hours just to make the smallest little game you could enjoy.
Well, it sounds like in some cases it can take dozens of people, Jay.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Like our team, Wraith Games, we have 12 people just working on even the smallest little projects. The game we're currently working on, Collapsis, we've actually been working on it for 10 years.
10
embarrassingly
years?
So.
Wow. Well, no, that was something else I was going to bring up, but keep going. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but the length of time it takes to actually develop something like this is part of the complexity
right.
as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, for a lot of smaller mobile games and things like that, you know, you can maybe churn out something in 6 months to a year, things like that. But one of the problems you're going to get into, the larger the project, the more time it's going to take. And if you are kind of working, doing other things at the same time, you end up sinking, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, et cetera, into this, you know, process. And it's crazy.
And Clayton, does it depend on the platform a lot of times? Are some platforms easier than others to get out quickly?
Certainly, yes. Especially if you're talking about the console market, there's a lot of red tape with the platform holders that you have to get through, and you have to work with their development kits and get used to their tools. Mobile's different. It's a little bit more open, a little bit easier to approach without sanction from the platform holders. Apple, for example, will charge you a fee, but it's not as you don't have to get like a multi-$1,000 dev kit. And then if you're targeting PC, you got to think whether you're doing Mac or Windows or Linux. And if you're targeting all these, they all run on different architectures. So if the game engine that you're using doesn't automatically put out to those, then you're maybe using multiple game engines with different teams and trying to keep all those schedules together. It can be quite complicated.
So as a developer, though, you have to deal with, say, Nintendo, Sony, whoever has the platform that you're using. That's what you're saying there.
Yes.
That's part of it, too.
If you want your game on there, yeah. You got to get their approval.
Yeah, if you want to get your product out there. Mm. So, Rob, is this an art or a science? Or a little bit of both, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's my chosen profession. I like to think of it as an art, but I think that's it's a subjective term for what art means to every person. But the games I enjoy the most have a very artistic quality to them in the visuals, engaging you emotionally, and aside from just the experience you had while playing it, they usually linger in your thoughts and memory for long after that, kind of changing you as a person. And I think those are the ones that hit me the hardest, the ones that I always talk about with other people, and we're able to connect over that.
Yeah, Jay, what do you think? A little bit of both?
I would absolutely say a little bit of both, especially because if you look at most teams, you'll have some computer science majors, and you'll have some arts majors, and then it, you know, each team's like, well, I think it's science because I'm in a STEM field and things. But at the end of the day, you know, it is both. But as art, you know, most of the time you're creating this interactive fiction. Usually, there are some games that are more mechanically driven and things like that. But I mean, the games that are doing kind of the best in the industry, the bigger games, they're movies or novels that you're experiencing, that you're living, and that's art. That's definitionally art.
Yeah, Clayton, what do you think?
It's actually kind of a long-standing debate in the game community, almost tongue-in-cheek, about whether games are an art. And I think it's so obviously an art that it's kind of a moot point to discuss, but it is art and science, going back to that point of how complicated it is and how much time it takes to dedicate your life to. Music composition can be someone's life, or graphics doing art. The in-game assets can be someone's, like, they're perfecting it their whole professional life. Engineering, it takes a lot. It's very complicated. Game development can be more complicated than a lot of plain Jane business applications. I guess that might be kind of condescending. But it's actually quite complicated.
Yeah, one other point along those lines is that I don't think games are a science, and that you can set out the certain objectives that if a game has this and this and this, it'll be successful. I think it's much more of an art form in that there's a lot of guesswork involved in how the elements are all going to combine together and how the player is going to experience that and what is going to make for, like, a big hit or not. You kind of have to figure it out as you go and let the game kind of speak to you and what makes it good.
Quantifiable metrics. There are no quantifiable metrics.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
I think science needs those, really.
Yeah.
How much of a risk is this, Jay? I mean, you're talking about not having quantifiable metrics, but you're taking a big chance here. You're coming up with an idea and throwing it out there and hoping it helping people catch on to it.
It's always a risk, but you can, depending on the size of your project, you can really sort of meter that a little bit. If you're wanting to make a smaller game in your spare time and you're just one person, you know, that's fine. But for people who've gone out and they've created their own studios, you know, you're gonna have to get loans, and you're gonna have to go and hire people, and you're gonna eventually have to quit your day job, and you're just gonna put yourself out there and be like, here's all this. And so for the past 11 years, we've been working kind of without a safety net, and we're just like, maybe the next leap will be the leap home. So it's a huge risk, and most studios don't make it. But at the same time, those who really put in time and dedication, they tend to be able to at least, you know, sort of doggy paddle through the industry.
I think I read somewhere too, Jay, that only about 20% of games that are put out are actually profitable.
Oh yeah.
Does that sound about right?
Sounds right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rob, you were kind of nodding in agreement as Jay was going along.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm in a position newly this year where I've quit my previous day job. I'm focusing on what was originally a hobby project, full time now. We got our first initial funding through Kickstarter, so now everything's on the line. Like, everything is at risk here to deliver to our fans and create a good product and not let the thing fall apart just due to time or lack of money. So, yeah, no safety net, high risk.
Yeah. How did each of you get started in this particular business? Clayton, how did you get involved in this?
It was probably one of my favorite game franchises is Mega Man, which may sound familiar. When I was 9 years old, there was a WYSIWYG tool called Click and Play from a company called Clickteam, a French or a European company. And I found these fan games. People had made games based on that series. And the nature of that ancient, probably 1995 software was that it wasn't, like, it was open. Any game that somebody made, you could dig into. And I started digging into that and getting used to the logic of engineering game engines or mechanics. And I fell in love. And I always had, like, characters, you know, kids' characters, cartoon characters, and I wanted to make them interactive, like, make the universes. And it's just, it felt so natural that it almost, like, I didn't really get into it. It was just always there, and I just found it, I guess.
Did you take any special schooling or anything?
Not at all.
Really?
Not at all, yeah.
Okay. Jay, what was your experience in getting into this?
I think the whole nine-year-old thing is going to sound really similar for me, because it was when I was nine when I realized that I wanted to make games as a career. Before that, I was like astronaut, firefighter, stuff like that. But, you know, I was playing Super Mario World when I was nine, and I'm like, nope, this is it. This is my career. And everyone told me, like, oh, you're crazy. Well, it was really, you know, I started messing around with modding tools and things back on Windows 3.1. I'm not that old. I just had old stuff. So the thing was that I ended up, when I was about 15, a group of friends and I are like, no, we are going to do this. Like, right now, completely, this is what we're going to do. And I ended up picking up a programming book from the local library. And that was terrible. Never use a programming book. But luckily, my mom was really supportive, and I went to my counselor at school, and I'm like, can you just put me into every class that has the word computer somewhere in it? And she's like, well, you won't have any core classes. And I'm like, I'll pick those up later. I'm in high school, it's fine. And so your mom's going to have to sign off on it, and she did, which is great. But what happened with that is I ended up taking a CAD class and a programming class and a web design and graphic design. I took all these crazy classes, and then I started making games with my friends. And then after that, I went to the Butler Tech School for the Arts, which is in Hamilton. It's a college equivalent arts education in a high school environment, which was amazing. I don't even know how they do it. But I started doing more stuff with that there. And then shortly after that, I took the leap into, like, after high school, I took the leap into full time. And that's like, yes, this is where I am. This is what I'm doing.
And Rob, what about you?
Yeah, similar stories for me. Definitely a love of games ever since I was a child. It was Sonic the Hedgehog was my first one that it really got me into it, and play arguably way too much. parents always said, "Oh, you'll never make a career out of that," and so here we are. But then I knew I always wanted to get into games. I tried to get as much focused education on that as I could in high school and in my undergraduate art degree, and I eventually went to get my master's from Full Sail in Florida in their game design and production track, because I knew I wanted to get into games. I wasn't sure. I was always passionate about design and writing, but I wasn't sure what my best path in. So that's when I realized that, like, I could take a production, like a project management path, and learn to run a team and figure out what it takes to plan all these things out and make sure that the project is going to move forward. So I graduated there, I did well, and came back to Cincinnati here, and as many of us who want to get in to games have found out, there's not a whole lot of opportunities here for people with that specific skill set. For the longest time, it's been you need to go to either coast in order to find those kind of careers at, like, the big AAA studios. And so with technology the way it is now, through mutual friends and people I'd met at conventions and online, we came up with a good idea for a game concept that we liked, an older genre that wasn't getting a whole lot of love these days. Built up a team through just forum posts and mutual friends, and started a hobby project 3 years ago, which has turned into Project Resurgence, which we are developing full time now. So I am literally living the dream.
In terms of time frame, I mean, you were talking about Collapsis, the game that you've been working on. It took you 10 years. Is that pretty typical that it takes 10 years to...
Oh, no.
That's on the long end of things?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Okay.
Some games take decades, but they usually get made fun of for that.
Yeah.
But
it's, sorry, Jay.
No, I get a lot. It's fine.
But normally it's a shorter time span.
It's case to case. Yeah. Rob mentioned AAA studios, which are the big budget. They've got publishers behind them. They've got investments, and they don't necessarily have those metrics to know, like, to be satisfying necessarily as an art or new thing. It's kind of like a blockbuster movie.
Games that, Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. In that they do have some financial. They're assured enough that they're going to make success with this that they put all this money in it, and they have hundreds of people working on the game, and maybe it'll take them a year, 2 years, depending on the game. Whereas with indies, it totally depends.
It could vary depending on how much time the person is putting into it. Like, if they're a solo team and they're only working on it in the evenings, it can take decades just to get your passion project made. But in like the AAA industry, even though some of these games come out with a sequel every year, most of them usually take 2 to 3 years of development time. Like they've been working on it for the past 3 years, while the earlier game in the series had just launched. Like they're already almost done with the next one. Sometimes.
What's it typically cost to create a game?
Well, it depends on the game.
Depends. Okay, so this is just case by case, as Clayton was saying.
Uh-huh. In many cases with indies, it's your time is what it costs. In my case, I'm bootstrapping. It's right now a spare time thing because it is a risk. And a lot of times, what indies are investing is their time and energy. It's a very consuming process, and not in a bad way. It's a passion thing, and so. If you invest a lot of time, and then it fails, it's not as bad because you're not failing professionally necessarily when it's a spare time thing. But you did maybe waste some time.
Yeah. The cost varies quite a bit depending on what is going to be in the game. Like it depends on art style. Like if you're going to use the retro Super Nintendo style pixel art. Or if you want like modern photorealistic graphics, like those, of course, cost way more in terms of time and everything. Overall size of the game, number of people involved, like so you can start with. I mean, if you're not paying yourself anything and you're just doing it in your free time, you can make a game on almost nothing. But if you want a fully staffed team, you're probably going to spend at least like $500,000 to several million dollars to make like a AAA. Style type game.
And one of the big reasons for this is if you look at the AAA industry, a typical artist gets a high-end five-figure income, and a programmer would get a low-end six-figure income. And they employ oftentimes hundreds of employees to work on these
games. But costs run the gamut, and a lot of times, as you're saying, Clayton, it can be your sweat and your tears.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So... how big is the industry in Cincinnati? I mean, you were talking, Rob,
you're looking
about...
it. You're just kidding.
Very nearly.
You're talking about how there's not a lot out there, but is it starting to show some growth?
Oh, certainly.
Okay.
That's our goal, actually.
Yeah.
We are part of a group called we say IGDA, but it's the International Game Developers Association. We're kind of kicking the Cincinnati branch into gear. We're doing all kinds of meetings and events, having people, guest speakers, having people show off their projects. There's a large hobbyist base. People who are doing it full-time, it's smaller. And through our efforts with IGDA or IGDA, we would like this to become a hub for that, the Midwest hub. That's sort of our dream, and we're pretty good at acting on our dreams, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like it. I guess as far as personality traits, if you're thinking about going into this business, I guess you have to be somewhat of a dreamer and also determined to follow your dreams through at the same time. Does that sound about right?
I think creativity is one of the top ones, and I think just tenacity. Like, you have to be willing to never give up on your dream and make it happen somehow, even if you're losing sleep or you're giving up other employment opportunities. Just the ability to finish something is super important.
And I think tenacity 100%, but actually, despite what you may think, a lot of us, if you're sort of multi-talented and sort of filling multiple roles with a small team, definitely creativity. But I've even had friends in the game development industry who they claim that they're not creative at all, and they do well because their passion is in the engineering, which is creative in its own right, but they don't think of themselves as like artistic creative. But I mean, you can have any sort of personality, any sort of preferences, and be able to fit somewhere in game development because it's such a wide-ranging set of skills.
So, is there any specific things you'd tell people to study if they were going to do this?
Oh, it's just everything.
Everything.
It crosses so many disciplines that I mean, it's actually kind of handy. If worst case scenario, your dream fails, you're going to have a lot of skills you can take to the marketplace.
Well, that's one of the reasons when I was in high school, I'm like, just put me in everything with the word computers in it. And there wasn't a single thing that I learned that hasn't affected me now, from even AutoCAD. It's just like, well, there's some 3D modeling experience right there. I can use that, and web design and all of that. It's, you know, every skill set is necessary.
Yeah. And Rob, I assume since you're working independently that you've got to be a jack of all trades.
I'm sorry, I'm not independent. I'm working with a team of like 15 guys.
Okay.
I'm just kind of running the show a little bit.
But you are indie.
Yes.
Your studio is indie.
Yes.
Yeah, studio is indie, so
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we're working independently of like a publisher of anything like that.
Like indie film.
Might like to change that in the future, but but yeah, I think the... Sorry, what was the question again?
You have to be a jack of all trades, it sounds like, you're going to do this.
Like the other guy said, I think learning as much as you can, getting a wide variety of skill sets is super important. But it depends on what you want to do as a developer. Like, if you want to be an artist, of course, you should take art classes. Or if you want to be a programmer, take, like, computer science. Mm-hmm. I think the best things to learn are, like, if you want to get into games, the best thing you can do is just start making games right now. And that's one of the big things we do with our group is we host, like, game jams and stuff so people can get together and over a weekend and just, like, churn something out. Just to see, like, look what I made over the span of 72 hours. Hmm. So that is super important.
Experience is a great teacher.
Yeah. Learn to communicate well, like, work in a group. Like, unless you're going to do it by yourself, you need to be able to talk to other people through written and verbal communication, and that's super important.
I think that there's sort of a stereotype about people who use computers a lot as their passion, maybe, dare I say it, nerdy or
awkward.
It's
a badge of honor.
But, well, it can be. But I think that's sort of a misconception because so many people, you have to work together. One of the things you should develop is the networking and just talking to each other and enjoying the art together.
Well, Clayton, Jay, and Rob, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. Pete Reitmeier was the producer for today's show. Belinda Kai was the assistant producer. And Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. Each Friday on Cincinnati Edition, we review and discuss the people, stories, and events that are affecting the tri-state. This week, we'll take a look at the latest developments in the race to become Cincinnati's next mayor. We'll also discuss medical marijuana and other major issues Ohio leaders will face during the upcoming year. That's our weekly news review on the next Cincinnati edition, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.